So just a nugget for thought. One other nugget for thought, this going back to Barrera, Bloom, and Davis. This is actually a separate study. They did a couple in this space, but I found this one absolutely fascinating. So I decided to share at least one of their figures. What are we doing with the time that we weren't spending in the car? Well, apparently, we spent something like 60 million fewer hours in commute over the last year. And if you stop and think about that, I heard a bit on this on NPR the other day, that means a lot less music being listened to. It means a lot fewer audiobooks. When you start breaking down, what is it I do in my commute? You do things. If nothing else, in all likelihood, you're listening to either news, a podcast, or music, possibly a book. Not if you're not commuting. So what do you fill that time with? Well, a solid 35% of respondents said, I'm working. Maybe that's where you're seeing those productivity gains, is I'm just working. Now, some other folks, and I think my favorite is the orange-ish graph down there at 18.6, is I'm watching TV. It's leisure. It's fun. Some of them, 8.4, picked up a second job. Some of them are going to work around the house. But it's important to remember, as you're thinking about the way work-life balance really functions and the way remote work really affects the life of an individual, it's not as binary or simplistic as work from home equals good. It has a lot of advantages. I do it. I plan to keep doing it. My staff can see the CLE broadcast. They already know. We've embraced the idea. But it doesn't mean it's the right solution for everyone. And it's not a panacea to having an intentional approach to the way you treat your workforce, and especially the way you interact with them across technology platforms. So with that primer, and we're going to return to the technology piece towards the end, but we got to frame this stuff in the law. I want to start with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now, when I started out to write this presentation, honestly, this was what I intended to talk about. I really was focused on the ADA because the one singular question that kept coming up the most in my practice on a day-to-day basis was, can I ask people whether they've been vaccinated? That was one. And I mean, everything ranging from I want to ask them as they walk up to the front door, to I want to send out an email survey, to I want to set up a poll. Okay, so I got that question a lot. Can I do it? And two, can I mandate it? And this second question is still what I would call in the wings, meaning every single client that I talk to is right now all carrot, no stick. How do I motivate and incentivize people to get vaccinated and return without mandating either one of those things? I don't want to say you have to come back, and I don't want to say you have to be vaccinated, nor do I want to say you have to be vaccinated to come back, although more clients are comfortable with that kind of middle ground than they are either of those other extremes. But I want to know, can I do this? Well, the law that comes immediately to mind for an employment lawyer is the Americans with Disabilities Act, originally passed in 1990, expanded dramatically in 2008. This is the closest thing that we have to medical privacy in the workplace. HIPAA covers certain collectors of personal health information, personally identifiable health information, which is not really employers. Like when employers are just dealing with their people, it's very rare that PHI is going to be involved. And so HIPAA kind of sits off to the side. There's another law we're going to talk about here in a slide called GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, very limited application. The king of the hill, the one that you're looking at when you're worried about this issue or you're trying to answer this question, is the Americans with Disabilities Act. Here's what it does. First, phenomenally expansive definition of disability. And we go into some detail about this in the paper, but it was in response to some Supreme Court and other cases decisions that said, we're going to read the first ADA literally, and very few things are actually going to be disabilities. By the time you get the Amendments Act, anything you can diagnose has got a shot at being a disability if it imposes limitations on a person. That's really how it works. What's more is even if you don't have an actual disability, you can have what's called a perceived disability. You're not really limited, but I did something negative to you because I think you have a condition. That's it. And so the proof is in the discrimination. If I discriminate against you for a medical condition I think you have, independent of whether it's really a disability, it becomes one. And so the ADA now covers a pretty wide universe of conditions. I can't discriminate against those. Well, says the employer, I'm not going to. I'm going to treat absolutely everybody the same. I'm not trying to treat anybody differently based on their medical conditions. Well, what about COVID-19? You'll note, if you go through the paper, the EEOC has been very quiet about whether COVID-19 itself is a disability. What I will tell you is that there is nothing preventing it from being considered a disability if either A, it imposes some fairly severe restrictions on a person. If you had a short 3-day COVID bout with some coughing and a sore throat, no. If it's into the hospital, probably. And if you have long COVID, almost certainly. And so anything that imposes a lot of restrictions, so it's fairly significant in what it restricts, or something that was long-term, say north of 6 months, has got a real good shot of being treated like a disability in its own instance. Well, even then, I'm not trying to treat people differently because of COVID. I just want them to quarantine, and then when they're ready, they can come back to work. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. That works perfectly fine under the ADA. What I want to know is, can I screen for it